So welcome to the second part in our series on the majesty and mystery, the mystery and majesty of the Megillah. I discovered this week that Rabbi Dr. Norman Lam has a book of the same name on a very different topic. I mean, it just kind of, you know, the alliterative M's tend to lend themselves to the same use, but I did note that, I unintentionally stole it from him. But last week we began grappling with the mystery that is Megillat Esther. As we talked about at length last week, one thing is very clear: it's not a Megillah. At least when we think of the other Megillot that we read in our Jewish year, Megillat Esther is not like any of them. Most notably, it's a mitzvah object. There's no other Megillah we make brachot before and after the recitation of. What we also explored last week in detail was the fact that we read it at both the night and the day. And what we explored last week was the kind of, I think, still the mind-blowing idea, but it's pretty undeniable that originally the Megillah was only read during the day. And Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi in circa, you know, or post-200 CE, as recorded in the Gemara and Megillah Daf Dalad, page 4, he innovates, or he institutes, and this recitation, this nighttime recitation also. And it seems pretty clear that it was only originally intended from the day, from the Tosefta that explicitly states if you read it at night, you've not fulfilled your obligation, to the Mishnah, which lists the Megillah as the archetypal daytime mitzvah, but does not include it in its list of nighttime mitzvot, and to just the general kind of notion that when we look in kind of the Mishnah and Gemara of how the Megillah functions, it seems to always implicitly be only being done during the day. And we explored suggestions as to why that could be, but fundamentally it leaves us with the question that we left the end of last week, being what is the Megillah? At the end of the day, what is this mysterious thing? What are we doing when we come to shul, Purim night and Purim day, to listen to the Megillah? What are we supposed to be doing? What are we fulfilling? What's its point? What's its purpose? What exactly is it? Why are we doing it? And part of the answer lies in this distinction between night and day, because now we have the further question that we're going to begin exploring a bit of, which is going to lead to giving us one answer for what the perspective of the Megillah is. But fundamentally, which is more important, the night or the day? Everything we saw last week would seem to lend itself to the daytime reading being the most important, but most halachic authorities don't take the line of logic we took last week to argue that the daytime is more important. So the question becomes, what is the more important of the readings? And we're going to see, as we try and explore that question, we're going to very quickly have raised for us one compelling suggestion we are going to explore in some detail today, is what exactly we are fulfilling when we gather in shul to listen to the Megillah. So to begin with, if we just turn to source number one, we'll come back to the page with the actual Daf of Gemara on shortly. But first, very quickly, to take a look at source number one. So in trying to understand, and again, I mentioned this last week, but right now we're not at the comprehensive theory stage. We are still going to leave today with more questions than we have answers, but we are slowly starting to answer at least some of the questions we have as we move forward. And then finally next week, hopefully we'll be left with more answers than questions. But to try and understand what is the important reading. Fundamentally, this comes up practically, halachically, in questions such as, if you can only listen to one Megillah reading, which one do you do? But we're more concerned with the realm of theory, which is just simply, we have a nighttime reading and a daytime reading, and the two are distinct. Which one is the important one? So I'm going to read the words of the Rambam, and as I'm reading them, see if there's an indication one way or another. He doesn't say it explicitly, but see if there's an implicit indication of which one the Rambam thinks is more important. The Rambam says the following in his Hilchot Megillah v'Chanukah. Mitzvah likrot et kula. Fine, you have to say the whole thing. U'mitzvah likrota balayla uvayom. And you say it both at night and during the day. V'chol halayla kasher likriat halayla. The whole night is fitting for reading it at night. When we think of some mitzvot that have, you know, time, you know, windows of time that they have to be performed in, think of the Shema. That's not one of these. You can say it for the whole night. V'chol hayom kasher likriat hayom, and you can say it the whole of the day. I mentioned this last week. Like, you can do Megillah reading at Mincha. There's nothing wrong with it. You can do it the whole day. Interesting to note, as we looked at last week, kind of the language of the Mishnah, which excludes the Megillah as a nighttime mitzvah. The Mishnah last week that we read, the Mishnah in Masechet Megillah, describes the Megillah is the archetypal kol hayom kasher lekriat, you know, haMegillah, the whole day is fitting, and then it gives a whole list of mitzvot that are fitting, you know, that fit the same paradigm, and then it gives a different list of nighttime ones, not including the Megillah. Here the Rambam just kind of folds that he uses the language of the Mishnah, but now also with nighttime, which is kind of interesting from a, literary is probably the wrong word, but from a, you know, intention of how he wrote. He intentionally kind of skips the Mishnah's exclusion of the Megillah and actually uses the same language of the Mishnah to include the Megillah in the nighttime. But fine. And then he says the following. Umevarich kodem kriyata balayla shalosh brachot. We make three brachot before we read the Megillah. Ve'eluhein. And these are the following. Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Hashem Kishanu Besod David Tzivanu al Mikra Megillah. The bracha of al Mikra Megillah on the reading of the Megillah. Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam She'asa Nisim La'avoteinu Bayamim Ahim Bazman Hazeh. She'asa Nisim. Again, we are familiar with that bracha. Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam She'echanu V'gimanu V'gilanu Bazman Hazeh. The bracha of She'echanu. Those are the three bracha we make before the Megillah reading. And then the Rambam adds, Uvayom Eino Chozeh Umavarech She'echayanu. But during the daytime, you don't make all three, you don't say She'echayanu, you only make the first two brachot. Reading that Rambam, what does he seem to imply about the importance of one reading over the other? Could one terse out from his wording, one mitzvah seems to be more important than the other? Any suggestions?
The one at night.
The one at night because?
Because there's a Shekhiyanu, which means it's the first time you're doing
it.
So on daytime, you don't say the Shekhiyanu because it's a repeat.
Yeah.
Like
so,
any other time.
You yeah, so many point to the Rambam as actually having a very interesting opinion here, which is the fact that we make three brachot before the nighttime Megillah reading, but only two before the daytime reading, seems to indicate something about their relative importance for one another, and many point to this Rambam as arguing, from here we see, that the Rambam adds significance to the nighttime, not present in the daytime, so you don't look happy at that line of argumentation. So you raise an excellent point, which is, if I would restate it slightly, there could be other reasons for the Rambam excluding the bracha of She'echayanu, and indeed, if we look at source number two, which is the Magid Mishnah, which is from Rabbi Vidal of Toulouse, a 14th century rabbi, the Magid Mishnah is one of the major commentaries on the Mishnah Torah. No one knows which Toulouse he's from. Today I learned there's also a Toulouse in Spain and not just France, and no one knows which one he's from. But nonetheless, the Magid Mishnah, one of the most influential commentaries on the Mishnah Torah, writes the following. In source number two, V'katav Rabbeinu, Shekevan Shebirech Balayla Shehechayanu, Eino Choza Umavarech Biyom. Because you made the bracha of She'echayanu at the nighttime, you don't go and do it again at the day. V'hari zeh kesukah. This is just like, you know, he says regarding sukkah. She'kevan she'birech zman balayla eino mevarech b'yom. Because you did it at night, you don't do it at the daytime. And then he adds, aval yesh min ha prashim she'katvu she'ikah kriyahu b'yom. Then there are others who write that the actual true reading is the daytime reading. And therefore, because we are reading the proper reading during the day, we make the bracha again, because it's the real mitzvah at this point. And this is indeed our practice. That's what he records. But what's very interesting here is he turns around and suggests, you know, we're a bit too enthusiastically reading the Rambam here. We're reading into things. Sometimes implicit statements have value. But there's another technical reason we can argue why the Rambam doesn't think you need to say She'echayanu. And it's nothing to do with the relative weight he assigns the daytime. Indeed, there are others, as he notes, who assign such significance to the daytime that we redo She'echayanu, which is the Ashkenazi practice. But fundamentally, the Rambam has a technical reason. It's nothing to do with how he views the Megillah, it's how he views the Baruch of She'echayanu. And so we can learn nothing from the Rambam, because at the end of the day, he doesn't say anything explicit. He doesn't say the daytime reading is the main one, or he doesn't say the nighttime reading is the main one. And so, at best, we can conjecture what he's saying, and we can come up with very good arguments as to why we think what he's saying, but fundamentally, if we have an even better reason to question that, we can question it. And so, though many look to the Rambam as a perspective on which one is more important, which Megillah reading is more important, ultimately it's inconclusive, because we could assign tremendous weight to the additional to the non-additional Shehecheyanu during the day, or we could just say, no, there's other technical reasons why the Rambam doesn't do Shehecheyanu. It's nothing to do with how he views the Megillah and everything to do with how he views Shehecheyanu. Fortunately, we have a far more explicit statement made by the Baalei Tosavot in source number 3. So this is on the Gemara we looked at last week. This is right on the page. And Tosavot says the following. First, they quote the Gemara, which we saw last week. Chayev Adam Likrot et Megillah Balayla v'lishnota bayom. A person is obligated to read Megillah at night and repeat it during the day. To which the Tosavot says, Omer Ri, quote Rabbi Yitzchak, one of the great Baalei Tosavot, Da'af al gav de mevarich zman balayla, even though we make the bracha of Shehecheyanu during the nighttime, choza umavarich oto bayom, we nonetheless repeat it during the day. De iker pirsume nisa have bikriya de yamama. The main reading, the main recitation of Megillah happens during the day, and we have our first indication of something that is, which is pirsume nisa, which often comes up in the context of Hanukkah. We want to publicize the miracle. That's indeed what we're going to explore in some detail, for the majority of our remaining time here. But the main thing we have first here is Tosafot says, look, the daytime is the major reading. So the first thing he notes is, as we saw last week, Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi brings a verse to justify nighttime and daytime reading, and that verse mentions daytime before nighttime. So that's what he's saying here. Kevan she'ez kiru hakatov techila, that it mentions the daytime first. The verse brought by Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi to prove that we read it mentioned daytime first. That's one reason that it's more important. Vegam ikka hasu'uda biyamahu, and also think of all the other mitzvot of Purim. We only fulfill them during the day. Kada amal kaban, as the Gemara writes a bit later on in Daf Zayin Amud Bet, de'im achla balayla lo yatsa. Yedei chovato, that if you have your Purim Seder at night, you didn't fulfill any obligation whatsoever. V'hachinami mashma medichtiv nizkarim v'na'asim. And furthermore, another proof that it's the daytime, we're really lining up why the daytime is the most important, is because, one of the things in the in Megillah is it talks about things being nizkarim v'na'asim, being remembered and done, ve'itkish zechira la'asiyah, and therefore we are equating this notion of remembering with doing. Ma ikka asiyah b'yama av zechira kein. Just as we do all of the asay, all the active mitzvot we do on Purim are done only during the day, like the Seuda, so to the Zechira, what exactly do we mean by Zechira? But that's the Megillah. So next week we'll talk about other potential things the Megillah might be, and this will come back into play as to what exactly we're talking about with Zechira here. But nonetheless, Tosafot gives many reasons to suggest that it's the daytime that's the main fulfillment of the Megillah, while also introducing us to this idea, this fascinating idea that what's motivating our reading of the Megillah is a fulfillment of Pirsume Nisa. So Pirsume Nisa, again, that's something we're familiar with Hanukkah, and that's nice, because Hanukkah and Purim fit nicely together. Okay, the Pirsume Nisa of Hanukkah involves candles, and here it involves Megillah reading, but, okay, that Megillah reading is, what does it mean? Now the question becomes, we move the question a bit further up the road, and now the question is, what do we mean by Pirsume Nisa? What is the Pirsume Nisa that the Megillah seems to function? And some of the answers to that start to emerge from the Gemara, which is kind of on the front page. And as I mentioned last week, every year we're going to have kind of a launch point Gemara. It is also source number 4. But to gain the feeling of like actually learning a piece of Gemara, sometimes there's a value to looking at the text itself as one would find it if you opened a Gemara. So the very front page is from Daf Hey of the Gemara, and you can see a triangle kind of the top because it's the last two words of the line, and it's an incredibly short piece but a fascinating piece. A fascinating piece that raises a lot of questions beyond what we're talking about. Really, really cool piece. And it says the following. So again, you can follow along in source number 4, but I'd encourage you to just look at the daf itself to gain that sense, that flavor of the Gemara as a very short piece. And it says the following. Amar Rav. So first we have a statement of Rav. Megillah bizmana. If you're reading the Megillah in its proper time, so just to pause, and last week we looked at the very first Mishnah in Masechet Megillah, which talks about the different dates you can read the Megillah on. As we know, we celebrate Purim on the 14th of Adar. There is Shushan Purim, which is walled cities from the times of Yehoshua ben Nun, celebrated on the 15th. But as the Megillah, as the Mishnah explains, you can actually read it as far back as the 11th if you live in a town. Because, as the general understanding is, if you lived in a town, there wasn't someone who was, you know, an expert in reading the Megillah. And so you would be basically come on market day. Mondays or Thursdays is when you have your market day. And when you're going to be among a large group of people, you can find someone to read Megillah for you then. This is what we mean here by Megillah Bizmana. And we're going to soon be introduced to the idea of Megillah Shalom Bizmana, known in its time. Megillah Bizmana means the 14th of Adar, or the 15th, but the 14th of Adar, Purim itself. When we're not, the Megillah not in its time is, you know, the 11th, 12th, or 13th, which is for alternative, for, you know, important reasons. And we're allowing people to read the Megillah, to fulfill the mitzvah of the Megillah early, but it's not Bizmana. So Rav says, Megillah Bizmana, korinoto afilu biyachid. On the 14th of Adar, an individual can privately read the Megillah and fulfill that obligation. Shalom Bizmana, Ba'asara. But if you are going to read it on the 11th, 12th, or 13th, you have to do it with a minyan. One of the other, you know, potential, ideas from small villages is not necessarily the expertise, but the need for a minyan, which would, you know, kind of add to this idea of people still need to come together and hear it. But fundamentally, Rav says something, you know, simple. If you're reading it on the 14th of Adar or the 15th, an individual can read the Megillah alone for their obligation. But if you're going to do it on one of the other potential days, you have to do it with a minyan. Rav Asi Amar, Bein Bizmana, Bein Shalom Bizmana, Ba'asara. Regardless, it doesn't matter what day you read the Megillah, you need a minyan. So reading this Gemara, that's basically the entirety of the Gemara we're going to read. Reading this Gemara instantly raises a question by most of kind of the commentators and codifiers who read this. And the question is, what's the case? What's the situation Rav and Rav Asi are debating? Are they debating the lechatchila, the ideal, or the bedieved, the non-ideal? In other words, we can take that question and read it back into the Gemara. It could be we are talking about an ideal situation. And for Rav, you never need a minyan to read the Megillah on Purim itself. There is never, ideally, you fulfill the mitzvah ideally, in its most complete sense, without a minyan. Rav Asi, on the other hand, thinks, no, lechatchila, in an ideal world, you need a minyan. But he would concede, if we read it through this lens, he would concede that if you, for whatever reason, can't have a minyan, you can still do so. That's one way to read this argument. The other way is to say, no, we're talking about an unideal situation. And, you know, Rav is basically saying, look, lechatchila, you should hear it with a minyan. Ideally, you would hear it in the minyan, but if on the 14th of Adar, you can't find a minyan for whatever reason, then you can read it privately and that's okay. But we're always talking about a bidyeved, non-ideal situation here, and that's what Rav says. Whereas Rav Asi is saying something, no, you can never, ever, in any circumstance whatsoever, read the Megillah without a minyan. So depending on the lens we read this Gemara, we either get a tremendous cooler, a tremendous leniency of Rav, which is you never need a minyan. Even ideally, you never need a minyan to hear the Megillah. Or alternatively, if we read it through a different lens, we get a tremendous chumra, a tremendous stringency of Rav Asi, which is you can never hear the Megillah without a minyan, it counts for nothing. So many, many different halachic authorities read this very Gemara through one of these two different lenses. And if you take a look at source number 5, and we take a look at the view of Rashi. As I read it, try and see which view does he seem to subscribe to? Does he see this as describing an unideal situation and Rav Asi is really strict? Or no, it's an ideal situation and fundamentally Rav Asi would concede you don't need to read it and, you know, you get there. For Rav Asi Amar Bein Bismana Bein Shalom Bismana. That's the quote from Al Gemara. Rashi says, Mitzvah Lachzor Achar Acha Asara Asara. You should repeat the Megillah. Like, if you can get 10 together, you should still repeat the Megillah. Mishum Pirsume Nisa. Because of Pirsume Nisa. Aval Ilo Eshkach Asara. But if you can't find a minion, Lo Amar Rav Asi Dela Likre. He's not saying, no, you can't read it. She'ein Iso Kriyata B'yachid. Because there's no prohibition of reading it privately. Ela mitzvah likrota basar, but it is a mitzvah. Here, the mitzvah seems to be used in the sense of good thing as opposed to fulfillment of obligation, which generally is not how we typically understand mitzvah. But yeah, you should do it with 10. But if not, the way Rashi interprets this statement is you should do it with 10, but, you know, it's not the end of the world if you don't. So, how does Rashi seem? Does he read this Gemara leniently or stringently? He reads it leniently. He's saying, look, Rav Asi was never intending to comment about a Bidi Evet situation. Rav Asi was only ever talking of, when Rav Asi says you need 10, that's only in a lechatchila, an ideal world. But no, if you don't have 10, you don't have 10. You're good. He reads this Gemara leniently. Nonetheless, there are several fascinating halachic authorities who think you don't, if you're not with a minyan, you don't make the brachot. They read the Gemara stringently. They think fundamentally it's talking about a Bidi Eved, and Rav Asi really believes you don't follow. You don't read it without a minyan. The motivation for following the view of Rav Asi, I didn't actually put it on source number 4, but if you look at the continuation of the Gemara, we're now 1, 2, 3, 4 lines down in the middle. After, you know, the words we have Shalob is Manah Sara, and then we have Have Uvda V'chashle Rav Lahad Rav Asi. That once Rav was actually, you know, he was in a situation and he took on board kind of the view of Rav Asi. So we seem to have within the Gemara itself this elevation of Rav Asi's view. So if we read Rav Asi leniently versus stringently, that's obviously going to impact us. But there are those halachic authorities who think Rav Asi is giving us a stringency, a chumrah, and because Rav was concerned for Rav Asi's chumrah, so should we, and we should never read it for a minyan. Nonetheless, there are many halachic authorities, among them the Shulchan Aruch, who do, as we saw with Rashi, who read this leniently. You don't need a minyan for Megillah reading, at least in a non-ideal situation, you don't have to worry. The most important aspect for us, though, is the other aspect that Rashi already alludes to here, which is this is all about Pirsume Nisa. When we think of Hanukkah as Pirsume Nisa, we translate it in terms of visibility. You fulfill Pirsume Nisa with your Hanukkah candles by making them visible. And the concern is if people can't see your Hanukkah candles for whatever reason, maybe you didn't fulfill it properly because you weren't publicizing the miracle enough. You weren't fulfilling what we're supposed to fulfill. Here, on the other hand, the Pirsume Nisa of Megillat Esther works differently. It's not about visibility, obviously, because it's not a visual medium, it's an auditory medium. And here it's about the number of people who hear it. Fundamentally, whether or not we require a minyan reflects on the notion of Pirsume Nisa. At least in an ideal situation, you should be publicizing the miracle. And what that means is you need to read it with a group of people. There needs to be a group of people. There needs to be a public recitation of the Megillah in the town. And how do we define public recitation in Judaism? With a minyan. That's what it means. Fundamentally, the point of the Megillah is to be Pirsume Nisa. Just as on Hanukkah, the candles are there to remind us of the miracle, so too the Megillah is there to remind us of the miracle of Purim. This is why it's so different to all the other Megillot. All the other Megillot, we read them for the sake of it. Maybe they set a theme. I mean, Eicha obviously sets a theme, but the others maybe set a theme for the Chagim, but fundamentally we're just reading them. But they don't have any other fulfillment. We don't make brachot on them. We don't care. You don't have to hear the other Megillot. But Megillat Esther, there's something else here. There's a miracle. There's a sense of Geula. You know, famously, and we're going to talk about this in a couple of Friday nights from now, but the reason we push off Purim to Adar Sheni and a leap year is because we want to juxtapose Geula to Geula, redemption to redemption. We want Purim to also kind of get us in the mood for Pesach with its own redemptive themes. And the point of the Megillah here is a story of redemption, of God saving the Jewish people, and we need to publicize it. And so how do we do a public reading? We need a minyan. And so the point of the Megillah from this angle here, what are we doing when we come to shul to hear the Megillah? We are taking part in the fulfillment of Pirsumei Nisa. We are hearing a miracle. Indeed, the Zechira that, you know, Tosafot speaks about might simply be just recalling the miracle that took place. That's what we are doing. We are remembering and, you know, hearing the miracle that took place. That's the notion of Pirsumei Nisa here. And indeed, this is really doubled down on by the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan, Rav Yechiel Michal Epstein, who is one of the most influential halachists of recent time. I've mentioned before, he and the Rambam are the only two people to have ever written a complete code of Jewish law. And the Aruch HaShulchan is just, it also summarizes everything. So it's the bit that comes just beforehand. He basically summarizes everything and more of what we've talked about. And he says the following. Source number 6. V'rak b'deleika asara muta likrot b'yachid ulevarech al ha-megillah lefanaha v'achareha. It's only when you don't have a minyan possible that you read it by yourself. So again, we're talking now about kind of an unideal situation. And that's when you can make the brachot. V'chein hu minhag ha'olam. And this is, and the Aruch Shulchan's very into the minhagim of his community. This is what we do. V'chol ma sheyesh yoter tzibor harei yoter hidor. And basically, the more people you can get to the Megillah reading, the more hidor, the more beautification of the mitzvah there is. There is a value to maximizing the people present. The Barov Am Hadrat Melech, he quotes a verse from Mishlei here, the glory of the king is in the multitude of the people, and this comes up, this has halachic value in several different mitzvot, but basically the more people around, the more the mitzvah is kind of celebrated. And it makes sense, the point is Pirsumei Nisa in a public reading. So if you have an opportunity of gathering 10 people together to hear the reading, or 30 people, or 500, you want to have 500 people reading. The Aruch HaShulchan, and he's going to, we're going to see this clearly in a second, but the Aruch HaShulchan is basically against breakaway Megillah groups. He likes the idea of everyone being together for Megillah reading. However, he does add an extra bit, which is just really fascinating for so many reasons. Ach im bebeit hakneset I efshar lishmor betuv. But if you can't hear the Megillah in shul, mipnei habilbol shel hakat haman ukeduma. Because everyone's making so much noise for Haman, which is a huge problem. Tov yoter likrot v'asar b'bayit. So fine, pull away a minion. Break away. But very clearly, you don't read it privately, but like you can start a breakaway. So the Aruch HaShulchan, and again, he's one of these halachas who also we can learn a lot descriptively from what he's saying about his community. But basically, he's like, look, everyone in the community should get together in the shul for one Megillah reading. But if for whatever reason people can't hear because it's being really noisy and the decorum's terrible, fine, then create your own breakaway. But otherwise you've got no excuse for breakaway Megillah readings. Something this aspect comes up in, and we're not really going to explore this in detail, is the question of women's Megillah readings. So the question comes up in communities which only have, the question is sometimes phrased this way. as I've heard it phrased by other rabbanim who, you know, have been asked this kind of question. Is your shul a shul that has more than one Megillah reading? If it already does, why object to a women's Megillah reading? But if you only have one Megillah reading in your shul, you know, both at night and a day, then, yeah, Barov Am Hadrat Melech. We can argue this principle of Pirsumi Nisehir, of getting the whole community together. We want the whole community assembled as one. So if you're already assembling the whole community, assemble the whole community. This is a clear and explicit value of the Megillah. But if you're already having a 7:30 p.m. reading and a 9 p.m. reading, which is, you know, crucial in, you know, our previous shul in New Jersey had two readings at night because that's really important when you have kids. You know, the worst time to bring a kid into shul is Megillah reading because either they are destroying the decorum or hating the lack of decorum. And so it's good to have these multiple minyanim. But then if you're already having multiple minyanim, you have abandoned the idea of Barov Am Hadrat Melech for good reason. And women's Megillah reading is just as good as a reason, you know, as all the others to abandon Barov Am Hadrat Melech. But if you're gonna otherwise, and I think it was based on also Barov Am Hadrat Melech, but I could be mistaken that Rav Lichtenstein famously, in Israel, there is this concept of Purim Mishulash, which I forget exactly what it is. I was in Israel when it happened, but basically, something falls out on Shabbat. And basically, then something gets pushed before and after, so you basically have a 3-day Purim. during that time, you read the Megillah early. And then, so Rav Lichtenstein's kind of point here is that when you're moving the Megillah early, that's when you really need a minion. That's when you really need kind of, you know, people to be assembled as one. That's the clear kind of idea that's coming through here. In such a situation, shuls, you know, in Israel and the Purim Mishulash should just have one Megillah reading. You know, maybe they have to have two for practical reasons, but basically they shouldn't have, and we shouldn't be having, you know, multiple different Megillah readings to, you know, fulfill people's needs. Otherwise, he didn't object to the notion of women's Megillah reading, but we see kind of the practical halachic force of the statement of the Aruch Shulchan here. But we also see here for us, what's the point of Megillah reading? Pirsume Nisa. And you know what? We take it really seriously because let's get as many people in shul as possible. We don't want people having breakaways. We don't want to sanction people doing this. Why? Because the more people hear, the more publicizing of the miracle. With Hanukkah, it's different because we don't talk in such language like if you happen to live on a busy road. But if you happen to live on a busy road, you are probably being, you know, publicizing the miracle more. But with Megillah, we have a clear notion here that every single one of us who turns up to shul increases the Pirsume Nisa, increases the publication, the publicizing of the miracle, and helps add to the Hiddur. And in and of itself, that I think is a very compelling reason, you know, why we turn up to Megillah reading. Well, we are helping the fulfillment of Pirsume Nisa. We are hearing the miracle. And the more of us who turn up, the more Pirsum there is, the more publicizing of the miracle there is. And that's indeed a good thing because it means a greater communal recitation of Megillah reading. Another fascinating application of this notion of Pirsume Nisa, though, not necessarily contrasting, but definitely going in maybe a slightly different direction, is quoted by the Or Chaim. The Or Chaim is Rav Avraham of Narbonne, who's the 13th century, and he quotes the Ra'avad. I'm assuming it's a standard Ra'avad. Ra'avad is Rav Avraham Av Beit Din, and there are actually three of them, and I forget the whole thing about there are three of them who all bear this name. The famous Ra'avad is the guy who's angry with the Rambam, and he has his Hasagot HaRa'avad, the critiques of the Mishnah Torah, printed in the Mishnah Torah itself. But whichever Ravad he's quoting, the Ochat Chaim says, and it would make sense, I could have done this very easily by seeing which of them lived before the 13th century. That would have been a good way to solve it. But anyway, one of the Ravads, we're just going to call him the Ravad because some people like to do Ravad 1, Ravad 2, and Ravad 3, but you have to know which one you're talking about to be able to do that. So anyway, Ochat Chaim says the following. V'haravad zal hichriya v'katav de'lo olam be'inan asara b'makom sheyesh sibor shekurua ba'asara. The need for 10 is we're talking about, fine, the community reads with 10. Im yesh yachid or yechidim shelo kurua imahen, but if there's either one person or a small group of people but not a minion who don't want to read with them, yachlu likroto biyachid, they can do so kevan shehaya ba'ir pirsum hanes bikriyat hatzibor, Because fundamentally, why? As long as it's taking place in the community, so it really is in many ways contrasting with the Aruch HaShulchan. And the Aruch HaShulchan, the more people we have, Barov Am Hadrat Melech is good. The Pirsumei Nisa here is for the Aruch HaShulchan listeners. The more ears there are in the room, the more Pirsum Hanes. The Ra'avad here, quoted by the Or Chel Chaim, has a different definition of Pirsumei Nisa, which is basically, as long as it's taking place in the community, the miracle is being publicized. Here, it's almost more the fact that it exists rather than the actual reading. It's not you going and hearing the Megillah, which is the Pirsumei Nisa, but the fact that there is a communal reading taking place. You'd wonder, based on this logic, is the mere fact that we now have a sign saying, we are reading the Megillah in the shul, starting at time X on Purim night. According to the Ravada, we already therefore, in a sense, fulfilled Pirsumei Nisa, because we are going to have a communal reading. As long as we can get a minyan, we will have our communal reading, and we fulfill Pirsumei Nisa. It's not about how many people are listening to it, it's simply about the fact that it's taking place in the community. I actually read this halacha, or this statement of the Ravada, and think about Kriyat HaTorah leaning. Because, again, no one has an obligation to hear laning in shul. The shul, the community, has to have laning take place. And again, one can compare, one of the other avenues we aren't really going to explore, but one can explore whether Megillah Esther functions as some sort of laning. But that element here is perhaps captured by the Or Chel Chaim, that it's simply a communal, you know, thing is taking place, a public communal act is taking place, and as long as it's taking place in the shul, that's Pirsumei Nisa. So depending on which, you know, side, practically again, it would impact how exactly we think of the Megillah reading. Because if we follow the Aruch HaShulchan, I think we have somewhat of the majesty now of the Megillah reading already starting to come into play, which is the more of us who are there, the more that increases Pirsumei Nisa. And indeed, you know, there's something special about when shuls feel packed at Megillah reading, when they feel fuller than usual, that's something. Whereas for the Or Chel Chaim here, quoting the Ra'avad, there's less of that element. But as long as it's taking place, you know, you need to be there, because if you're not there, maybe other people won't be there, and then that's going to be a problem, because we need to have, you know. But fundamentally, there's less of an emphasis on the majesty of us listening to the Megillah. It's more just kind of this formal act taking place in the shul of Pirsumei Nisa. And it doesn't really matter how many of us are there, you know, hearing the idea, hearing the Megillah, hearing the Geula. That doesn't really matter. All that matters is, you know, it takes place. And so that brings one possible idea of what the Megillah is. One of the strongest arguments we can articulate for what exactly the Megillah is it is Pirsumei Nisa. Like Hanukkah, and that fits so nicely, because when Purim and Hanukkah are married to one another, conceptually that's nice, that's neat, that's clean. It fits that both of them kind of parallel one another. And it gives us kind of, okay, what are we turning up for? What's the point? Pirsumei Nisa, publicizing the miracle. We need to hear the miracle of Purim. We need to hear this redemptive story. It inspires us in some way to hear it. And that is Pirsumei Nisa. But I'll admit that there's a level where I find this answer deeply unsatisfying. Simply because what I can't shake is that what we abandon very quickly here is really this difference between the nighttime and the daytime. Like, Tosavot seems to imply Pirsumei Nisa is taking place during the day, but why not at night? What fundamentally is happening differently? We're assuming already at this point in history, Jews are getting together as much at night and as daytime. Fine, in the times of Chazal, you know, fine, they weren't doing it at night, so there was no Pirsumei Nisa, but already by, you know, most of Jewish history, they are doing Pirsumei Nisa both at night and at day. And so what I can't shake is this desire to have my cake and to eat my cake and have it too, which is I want to distinguish between the two. I want to sever the nighttime and the daytime from one another. I want to turn up to shul on the night of Purim, and maybe there's selfish motivations here. I want to turn up to shul on the night of Purim thinking, oh, I am doing something at this Megillah reading, and then turn up the next day and be like, I'm doing something different this Megillah reading. So I really want to sever the two. So I am happy to let one of them be Pirsumei Nisa. The problem is I can't necessarily find... I mean, we will see next week people who start splitting the two into different things. But yeah, let's make the night Pursuminisa, because again, I want to model it on Hanukkah, where the Pursuminisa takes place at night. The question really is, and what's going to, you know, be our concluding shiur next week, which is, but what else is the Megillah? Can we say the Megillah is Pursuminisa at one point, but it's also something else? And what we're going to start exploring next week is what I think is you know, the best or last, the most fascinating topic of them all, which is the famous statement of the Gemara that the Megillah is halal. That by reading, we don't say halal on Purim. Why? Because we read the Megillah. That's what the Gemara says. We'll obviously explore it next week, and that will be our launch point, Gemara. And maybe when we have this concept of Pirusuminisa, and we have this concept of halal, and we have a few of the different potential candidates for what the Megillah is, all of which are floating around, we can then really sever the night from the day. And we can turn up and reveal the true majesty of the Megillah, which is to realize that it wears many different hats. And it does many different things, and our listening to it, our turning up in shul, fulfills many different things at different times and at the same time. And hopefully through that we'll really gain an appreciation of the reading of Megillah Esther. But for now, at least this idea of Pirsume Nisa, this idea that the Megillah Esther serves as a function of publicizing the miracle. We want to hear that miracle. It inspires us. It teaches us, you know, it gives us an idea of Geula, redemption. That in and of itself is an incredibly important message. And maybe I'm being selfish and wanting more than just that for both readings. But what we've seen here is the clear indication that the Megillah reading, at least one of them, is about this notion of Pirsuminisa and publicizing the miracle. And if we follow the Aruch HaShulchan, it is incumbent upon each one of us. Every single one of us has a role to play in that fulfillment because of Barovam Hadrat Melech. Because the more of us who are present during the Megillah reading, the more the miracle is being publicized, and thus the more the mitzvah is being fulfilled. And through that, we are able to start fulfilling one of the key aspects of the Megillah Pirsumei Nisa, and really adding to the hiddur, adding to the majesty of what Megillah is by being present to hear it.